All right, well, hey, welcome to church today for part four of a five-week series we're doing called Love Does, Love Does. Before I get into the series, though, real quick, I want to give you an announcement, because after this series is over with, which would be on the weekend of February 11, 12, we're launching a brand new series that I'm super excited about titled Hashtag Trending, subtitle, How the Online Revolution Changed Everything, Even You. Okay, now, it sounds intriguing, right? And that's because it's true. Over the last 20 or 30 years, we've seen a technological explosion in our country. And while we've been able to revel in a lot of the glories of technological advancement, a lot of us haven't stopped and asked, what's this doing to our soul? And so that's the point of the series. We're going to talk about how technology can be an obstacle in building relationships. We're going to talk about how technology and social media can distort your relationship or distort your identity. So anyways, it's one of those series that I think we do well, where we take a hot topic that's right in front of us and talk about it straightforward, inject some biblical truth in it, so you won't want to miss it. Now, the coolest part about that series, though, isn't necessarily what's happening on any of the weekends, but it's what we're doing on February 15th, which would be the first Wednesday after the series starts. On February 15th, we're having a parent night, in which is which we're going to invite four experts to come in and sit on a panel and talk about parenting our kids through a social media age. Parenting our kids through a social media age. One guy used to be with the cyber crimes division in the FBI. We've got a representative from Oldham County Schools coming. We've got an author who's written a book on this stuff. And we've got a parent who's really, really tech savvy from our church who's going to come and share some life hacks. So if you got a kid, sign up for this. Okay, if you got a kid, get some of your best questions gathered up and make sure that you are here for this night. We think it's going to be so good that we're offering free childcare. All right, all we need you to do is RSVP and tell us how many you're bringing. So sign up as soon as possible and make sure that you come out to that. Now, Love Does. All right, so broadly, the reason why we did this series was twofold, really. One, I wanted a really, really good excuse to invite Bob Goff back, because, I mean, when you bring Bob Goff back, it's just awesome. You just get a shot of energy, right? But second, I wanted a context in which I could just stop and talk about four really, really practical things that I believe Love Does, that I think our church needs to hear, and perhaps even our culture needs to hear, especially. Like, for example, 2 weeks ago, we talked about the growing racial divide in our country and what the church should be doing about that. And believe it or not, that's a love issue. Last week, we talked about the dissolution of friendship, the lost art of friendship, and how we are the most connected generation ever, but at the same time, we're the loneliest generation ever. And I believe that's a love issue. Now, today, we are going to talk about generosity, cultivating a lifestyle of generosity. I'm going to teach you, to the best of my ability, how to be generous. And believe it or not, according to the scriptures, that is a love issue. Now, on a really, really personal level, last year, 2016, was the best financial year in the history of Northeast Christian Church. And I just want to take a moment to say thank you for that. And in fact, I gathered some of our staff this week, and we made a short little thank you video just to tell the folks of Northeast how grateful we are and to show you some of the new things we are able to do already this year because of your amazing generosity. So you can roll the film.
Because of your generosity, we've been able to go from one ply to two.
Because of your generosity, our baptistry is now exclusively feeding water.
Because of your generosity, now our communion bread is baked fresh at Panera, and it's gluten-free.
Because of your generosity, we were able to replace all the LED lamps in the Jesus' Y wall with tanning bulbs.
Thanks to your generosity, we were able to fund Tyler McKenzie's new rap album coming this summer.
And because of your generosity, we're able to automate a lot of the Love the Ville activities with drones.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Hello. Everything always sounds like a really good idea when you're sitting in the creative room, and then it's kind of like, no, that's awesome. Now, look, here's the deal. We are going to talk about living a generous lifestyle, and I'm going to tell you at the front end that when we get to the end of the message, I'm going to make an ask of everybody who calls Northeast Christian Church their home. I'm going to ask you in 2017 to give a sacrificial, consistent percentage of your income to our church. I told you this was coming last August. This is just me circling back, being a man of my word, and coming back to my promises. Now, for those of you who are new here, though, or for those of you who aren't a Christian and you would never give to a church, you're just kind of checking the whole Jesus thing out, or for those of you who are still suspicious of our church and you came in and you're like, oh, they got a give kiosk and Jesus smoke. Look at them, right? Okay, if that's you, I'm going to tell you that broadly, the vast majority of this sermon is going to be about a generous lifestyle. All right, so you can listen. You can even take in some of it. And I welcome you when we get to the end and I like make the ask. I'll tell you, okay, I'll say it's that time, all right, when we make the ask. You can get on your phone. Like, you can get on Twitter, put some headphones in, listen to Spotify, take a nap. I don't care. Go refill your coffee. You can completely and totally ignore me. I welcome you to do that. But I do believe you'll benefit from the majority of what we're going to talk about today. Because we all have a thing or two we could learn about generosity, right? Like, maybe a thing or two. Now, I know what your gut reaction is. As soon as I say that, you know, your gut reaction is to get a little bit defensive and to think about, you know, the one or two times that you gave or the five or six times you gave last year. You know, I'm a pretty generous person, but that's not what I believe generosity is. I don't think generosity is something you do. Rather, generosity is who you are. Giving is what you do. But generosity is a reflex that you build over time. Generosity is an approach to life, an approach to your finances, where you orient your finances around giving first. Generosity is making giving a supreme value for you rather than an afterthought. And that's not how most Americans approach their finances. All right, in fact, the way most Americans approach their finances isn't generous. It's absolutely insane. Okay, let me lay it out for you. And this might sound familiar to some of you. First off, most of us make more than we need. If we're honest, we make more than we need. And so second, in light of that, most of us spend at least all that we make. And so because of that, most of us are way more stressed than generous. And that's crazy. That's insane and totally unnecessary and not the pathway to generosity. Okay, you're not getting it. So let's try this again. All right, first, most of us make more than we need. That means if we were honest, okay, most of us are rich. Again, let's just be honest. Most of us are rich. Most of us, especially in global standards, are at the top. If you make more than $25,000 a year, then you are in the top 2% of wage earners on the planet Earth. So I'm just saying, like, we could grab a kid from a third world country and bring him into your apartment or bring him to your home, and, you know, he would look around and go, wow. You're rich. Is that an Apple TV? Right? And you would try to explain to him all the financial pressures you're under because I don't feel rich. But then he would go, wow, indoor plumbing, electricity. What's that cool breeze I feel on my face? That's air conditioning, son. Whoa, what's air conditioning? You're rich, right? And honestly, we are. Okay, we live in a land of plenty, a land of prosperity. We shouldn't be ashamed of that. That's a blessing of God, and there's nothing inherently wrong in that. There's nothing inherently wrong with making more than we need. Where it gets wrong and destructive is what we do with it. All right, and most of us go from number one to number two. We make more than we need, and so in light of that, we spend at least all we make. Now, how do I know that? Well, last year, the Bureau of Labor Statistics released a statistic that said that the average American spends 97% of their money. Spends it. 97%. Now, that's a lot. And that's just the average. Some of you are so good at spending that you spend 98 or 99 or 100%. In fact, some of you are so good at spending money that you spend more than you make. That's crazy. I don't even know how that's possible. Okay, no, I'll tell you how that's possible. It's possible because of this innovation that's been developed in the last 50, 60 years called consumer credit. Consumer credit. See, basically, here's what consumer credit allows you to do. Anytime you see something shiny or new that you really, really need, right? Not want. You need it. You can take out a piece of plastic and swipe, 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 and you can take possession of that shiny new thing right now in the present and then stick the February version of you with the bill. It's like, sucker, I'm going to enjoy it now and you're going to pay for it, February. That's crazy. The February version of you is you. Okay, that's crazy. Okay, here's what else we do. And you just haven't, it's become so normal and such a natural part of our culture that you don't even notice it. But over the course of your life, several times, you will purchase things that you can't afford to pay cash for. And then the second you take possession of that thing, it will radically decrease in value and continually increase in cost because of the interest you pay. That's crazy. Okay, let me say it again. Over the course of your life, several times, you'll purchase stuff that as soon as you take possession of it, it will radically decrease in value and continually increase in cost because of the interest you'll pay. And you're okay with that. I'm okay with that. And that, is that not crazy? Let's rewind like 50, 60 years in time. And let's say a salesman went up to your grandpappy Jed, all right? And he said, hey, grandpappy Jed, I'm going to sell you this truck for $30,000. But over the next 7 years, you're going to pay $45,000 for it. And then at the end of 7 years, you're only going to be able to sell it for about $8,000. Deal? You know what your grandpappy Jed's going to say? He's going to say, get off the lawn. You know what I'm saying? Because that's just crazy. That's crazy. And yet that's how many of us live. And so no wonder number three is the reality. Most of us are way more stressed than we are generous. Because you can't be generous, even if you wanted to be. You can't save, even if you wanted to save. And most of us want to be generous, and most of us want to save, but we have no margin. We're up to our ears in unmanageable debt. We're living paycheck to paycheck. We're stuck in a job we don't even like because it pays. And it's straining our marriage. It's causing daily worry and anxiety. And you know what you do when you get worried and anxious, right? You go to the mall and you spend more, and it's just this self-perpetuating cycle that gets you in a whole lot of trouble. Now look, that's crazy. So I'm your pastor, and one of the things I get paid to do is on a regular basis to stand up here and speak truth in love to you. So in the most loving way possible, let me speak the truth. Some of you have a problem. Okay, and you think it's a salary problem or it's an income problem. If I could just increase 10% or 20%, then I'd be okay. It's not a salary problem. It's a self-control problem. It's a priorities problem. It's a generosity problem. And Jesus, our Savior and Lord, would tell us all that it's also a spiritual problem. And spirituality aside, I mean, if you had a financial advisor come up to you and say, here's what I'm going to do for me. All right, over the next 5 years, you're going to make more than you need, but we're going to spend more than you make, and we're going to rack up unmanageable debt and live in daily anxiety, and your marriage is going to fall apart. Then what would you do? You'd fire him. You'd fire him. Some of you need to go home, look in the mirror, and fire yourself. Because that's how you're managing your money. And it's a problem. Now, you know where I believe the problem begins? I believe the problem begins with how we respond to step one. Step one's not the problem. You can be filthy rich, and there is nothing wrong with making a whole lot of money. There's nothing inherently evil about making money. All right? Where it becomes evil is what we decide to do with it. And what most of us decide to do with it is selfish. Okay, let me simplify this for you even more. This is what step two looks like for most of us. Next slide. We spend first, we save what we can, and then we give what's left. That's what step two, we spend first richly on whatever we want. We save what we can. Okay, and by what we can, I mean like if your employer has a 3% match program, you might just let them take it out of your check, you know, because if I don't see it, I won't spend it, right? Who said that before? I've said that before. I say that a lot. Who said that before? If I don't see it, I won't spend it. Come on, be honest. All right, let's talk about that for a second. Just quick sidebar. If I don't see it, I won't spend it. That's not a compliment to you. Just saying. So we spend first, we save what we can, and then we give what's left. We give what's left. And that is not the pathway to a generous life. Because you see, generous people prioritize giving. Generous people allow their lives to revolve around giving. And for most of us, our financial model just sets us up for minimal giving. Now, here's the good news. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, the Apostle Paul suggests for us a completely different step number two in response to step number one. He writes this letter in 2 Corinthians to a church in Corinth that is very, very wealthy. They make more than they need, right? And he gives them a step two that I think you will find so simple that some of you will leave today and want your money back. You'll be like, did I really just roll out of bed and drive through the snow for that? But at the same time, you'll find that it is so brilliant that if you apply his step two to your number one, then it'll flip your step three. And rather you being more stressed than generous, you'll be more generous and stressed. I want to show you the principle. Now, let me set the context before we get into the passage. Again, in 2 Corinthians 8, Paul writes to a very, very wealthy church in Corinth. And he spends like two chapters just like coaching them on generosity. One day we'll come back and do an entire sermon series on these two chapters because it's just full of amazing giving principles. We're just going to focus on one. Now, the reason why he writes to them about generosity is because he's collecting an offering for the church in Jerusalem. See, the church in Jerusalem has a lot of poor people in it, and they can't afford to provide for them all. But that's what the church does. You provide for your brothers and sisters in Christ when they're in need. So Paul told the church in Jerusalem, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to all the churches that I've planted and that I'm associated with all throughout the Roman Empire, and I'm going to ask them to give to the cause. And then I'm going to bring some money back, and we're going to help provide for your poor, for your needy. So that's what he's talking about here with the Corinthians. That's the motive behind the offering. Now, to start the inspiration, first, Paul points to another church and their generosity to motivate the church in Corinth. Pick up in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. Paul writes, "Now I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters, what God in his kindness has done through the churches in Macedonia. They're being tested by many troubles, and they are very, very poor. But they're also filled with abundant joy, which has overflowed in rich generosity. For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more." In other words, Paul says, there's this group of churches out in Macedonia, and they're struggling. They're really, really struggling. In fact, they're very, very poor. But they've come to realize that even though they're poor, they still have more than what they need. And so they've rejected the idea of ownership. They've accepted the reality of stewardship. All they have is God's, and they're just stewards of it. And because of that, they've carved out a generous offering to give to the cause. You don't have to be rich in order to be generous, right? Now, he goes on, verse 3. He says, and they did it, check this out, they did it of their own free will. In fact, they begged us. They begged us again and again for the privilege. Underline the word begged in your Bible. They begged us again and again for the privilege of sharing in the gift of the believers in Jerusalem. Now, can you believe that? The people begged the pastor. It's like, you know, like a pastor can only dream. All right. Now, if the inspiration of the example of this poor church that was very, very generous wasn't enough, then Paul plays the Jesus card on them, okay? Check this out. Verse 8. He says, I'm not commanding you to do this. No, I'm not commanding you. I'm just testing how genuine your love is. Because generosity is a love issue, right? It's a love issue. I'm just testing how genuine your love is by comparing it with the eagerness of these other churches. See, you know the generous grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that by his poverty, he could make you rich. So basically he says, you don't love Jesus if you don't give. Anyway, that's his words, not mine. Now, he gets to the crux of his argument in verse 11. And this is like we get to the principle that I really, really want to hit on. Okay, this is where Paul gives us his number two, his step number two to our step number one. Let me put it in a question form. Hey, Paul, what should we do when we make more than we need? Well, verse 11, Paul says, you should give. You should give in proportion to what you have. Whatever you give is acceptable if you give it eagerly, and give accordingly to what you have, not what you don't have. Of course, I don't mean your giving should make life easy for others and hard for yourself. That's not what I'm saying. I only mean there should be some equality. And right now you have plenty, and so you can help those who are in need. Later, maybe they'll have plenty and they can share with you when you need it. In this way, things will be equal. But give in proportion to what you have. Now, have you ever thought about that before? Have you ever asked yourself the question, why has God given us more than we need? Again, we live in a land of prosperity. We live in a land of plenty, and thank God for that. But why did you win the birth lottery? Why did God put you here? You ever asked yourself that? Why has God given us more? Maybe it's so we can spend all of our money on ourselves or continually increase our lifestyle as we get richer and richer and richer and richer. Maybe that's it. Or maybe it's because God doesn't want us to be anxious or worry. Or maybe he wants us to be able to retire really early. Or maybe he wants us to be able to live a big, big, big inheritance for our kids. Maybe that's why. I don't know if that gets at the heart of what Paul's saying here. You know why? You know why God's given us more than we need? Okay, let me explain it to you with a really, 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 really simple example here, okay? Let's imagine for a second that you're a parent. Some of you are a parent, so that doesn't really have to be, you don't have to do much imagining there, okay? And let's imagine that one day, as a parent, you take your son, Billy, and his best friend, Johnny, for a picnic in the park, Billy and Johnny, all right? And it's 2016. So you take your son, Liam, and his friend, Aiden, to the park for a picnic, okay? And when you get to the park, Liam opens up his lunchbox, and Aiden opens up his lunchbox, and, you know, Liam pulls out his apple, okay? Aiden pulls out his apple. Liam pulls out his juicy juice, and Aiden pulls out his juice. Liam pulls out his Lunchables, you know, stay over there, that's his. And Aiden pulls out his Lunchables, and then Liam pulls out his chips, and Aiden pulls out his chips. And they eat their lunch. And then, after they get done with their lunch, Liam goes back to his lunchbox, and he pulls out his dessert, a king-size Reese cup with four Reese cups in it, right? Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, amen. Oh no, Aiden goes to his lunchbox, and his mom forgot to pack him any dessert. Now, in that moment, mom, in that moment, dad, what are you going to coach your son Liam to do? What are you going to say to his best friend, his sweet little friend Aiden? Too bad, so sad you're dead, buddy. You know, sorry, Mom of the Year award. Here's a piece of gum from my purse. Hold on. Right? You know, no, that's, okay, what are you going to say? What are you going to say to Liam? Again, it's so simple, right? It's so simple. You're going to tell him one word and one word only. You're going to tell him to share. Wow. You got it. You're going to tell him to share with Aiden. Because that's what you do. When you've got more and people got a need, especially your friends, right? You're going to tell them to share. And if Liam decides to share without you coercing him, without you saying anything to him, without you writing two chapters in a letter to him or sending a preacher to guilt him, if Liam decides all by himself to share with Aiden, then I'm going to tell you what, you are going to be a really, really proud mom or a really, really proud dad, aren't you? Because that's the right thing to do. Now, I wonder how God, our Heavenly Father, feels about how his children in the United States of America are sharing their king-size Reese cup. I wonder. But look, it's so simple, though. The solution is so simple. When you break it down to the level of a child, isn't it? Look, it's that simple for us as adults. What do you do? Why has God given us more than we need? To share. To give to those who have need. Let me read this to you one more time. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 11. Give in proportion to what you have. Right now you have plenty and can help those who are in need. So, might I suggest to you then today an alternative financial model that will help you move from more stressed and less generous to a generous lifestyle? Okay, might I suggest to you an alternative model? Rather than spending first and saving what you can and giving what's left, what if we just flipped the model on its head and we decided to prioritize giving and we gave first and then we saved what we should and then we spend whatever's left? We give first. Like, we decide what we want to give to, and then we carve out a self-sacrificial, consistent percentage from our income, and we just get it out of our control and into God's control. We get it out of our control and into a stream of generosity supporting some cause or some organization we believe in. We give first, because that's what generous people do. Then we save what we should, because saving creates margin when emergencies happen. Saving creates margin when you want to be spontaneously generous. Saving creates peace as you move closer to retirement. Right? You give first, you save what you should, and then you spend what's left. And I bet you you'll still have plenty. And look, yes, my life might be a little bit more simple for you in column number two here, but I guarantee you it'll be a whole lot more joyful, a whole lot less stressed, and a whole lot more generous. Now, let me give you a little insight on Lindsay and I. When Lindsay and I first got married, which is a little bit more than 5 years ago, our combined household income was a little less than $25,000, which puts us in the top 2% of wage earners in the world, right? We were rich, okay? $25,000. And we lived in a girls' dorm on a college campus. I had two part-time jobs. Lindsay, you know, was making ends meet as best we could. Her job actually got us the housing. The dorm was tore down the next year, just to give you a little insight on the living conditions. And yet, that first year, we decided that we wanted to be generous. So we got together, we looked at our finances, we started trying to budget, and we were like, we don't have any margin. Like, we got bills to pay, we got student loans. What in the world are we going to do? So we prayed about it, and we discussed it, and we debated it, and we came back, and we decided that from the beginning, we wanted to establish a tone of generosity. We just wanted to give first, trust in God, and trust that he'll take care of the rest. Now, when we grew up in church, we had always heard the 10% number, 10%, 10%, 10%. I'm not really a 10% guy, to be honest with you. I think you should give self-sacrificially. I think you should give to a place of uncomfort. So that might be 2% for some of you. That might be 50% for others of you. But you need to go home and pray about that and talk about that with the Lord. But we had always heard 10% growing up. And so we didn't want to be average Christians. So we carved out 11%. 11% of our income. And we gave it away. We gave it away. And it hurt. But God, believe it or not, God provided. And you know what? It didn't make a really big impact at the local church we were a part of, that 11%. You know, it didn't make a huge impact to the few causes we were able to support, but it made a huge impact on us because from the beginning we said, we're going to be generous. And so today, as our income has continued to increase, our percentages have continued to increase. And it's never even been a second thought for us. Now, that is not a pat me on the back moment. You can hate me if you want to. That's fine. That's not a pat me on the back moment. That's just me saying that was our priorities, and it's worked for us. It's helped us to be more generous with our lives. And today, you could start that. There's no reason why you couldn't gather the people around the table that need to be gathered around the table and make a decision today to change your financial model. Now, you know where Lindsay and I have always given to, primarily? This is the part where if you're not really into church, or you're not like really into Jesus, put in your headphones, Spotify, go get some coffee, whatever. Okay, but you know where Lindsay and I have always given a majority of our income to? We've given it to the local church that we've been a part of. For two reasons. One, because we're passionate about it. And two, because we're thankful for it. We're passionate about it and we're thankful for it. Now, those should be your two filters. No matter where you decide to be generous with, I would suggest to you write those two down. What am I passionate about? What am I thankful for? And use those as filters. What am I passionate about? What lights my fire? What do I look at and say, that should not be so, and I want to be a part of the solution there? You know, what do I get excited about? What am I passionate about? And what am I thankful for? Like, who's helped me? Who's changed my life? Who's helped my kids? Who's saved my brother? Who's cared for my parents? Right? What am I passionate about? What am I thankful for? Now, for Lindsay and I, the beautiful collision of those two points is the local church in our life. There is nothing we are more passionate about than the mission of Jesus in the world. Nothing. Not only, as followers of Jesus, do we get to meet the temporary needs of people right here and right now. Like, not only do we get to feed the hungry, not only do we get to clothe the naked or care for the immigrant or go and lean into and minister to the prisoner, but we also get to do it in the name of Jesus, who changes lives not just in the temporary, but forever. More. And that excites us. I get emails about causes and initiatives to go and pour my money into or my time into every single week, just like many of you. But more often than not, we say no, because there is no mission on the planet Earth we are more passionate about than the mission of Jesus and his church right now. We're passionate about it. But we're also very, very thankful for it, because the church raised us. The church introduced both of us to Jesus. The church married us. The church has buried some of our closest friends and family members. The church has been there for us in our high times to celebrate with us. The church has peeled me off the ground a couple times. when I was at life's low points. You know what? Today, the church is where I find a lot of my friends. The church provides for our livelihood. The church is helping me and Lindsay raise our son. We don't have family in town. And so guess who takes care of Palmer when Lindsay and I want to have a date night or when we both got to work on the same day? It's people of the church. And I know that no matter how bad life gets, or no matter how boneheaded of a mistake I make as I get older, the church, there will always be a local church there to help me heal and to care for my needs in return. Isn't that the beauty of it? Now look, I want to create a church like that for the next generation. I want to be a part of growing a church like that because I believe there is no better remedy for the things that ail our city, country, and world. And if that's you too, if you believe that, if you're passionate about that and thankful for that, if you believe that Jesus is the hope of the world and the church is his body in the world, then you should be given to a local church. So I would challenge you in 2017 to give a sacrificial, consistent percentage of your income to this local church. And you never know. If you guys are generous enough this year, maybe we can go from 2-ply to 3-ply. In 2018, all right? Now, here's how I want to end. Here's how I want to end. I want to end by giving you a brief financial report of where the church is at the end of 2016. Okay, and here's why. I want you to see the generosity of the people of this church, and you are surrounded by some of the most generous people on the planet Earth right now, but I want you to see the generosity of the people of this church through the same lens that I do and our staff does, through the lens of life change. So, we got the PowerPoint fired up. We ready? First number. Okay, this year we budgeted approximately $5 million in expenses. $5 million. Now, you guys ended up blowing that out of the water with your giving, but we budgeted $5 million in expenses, and 1.7 of that goes to what makes Northeast Northeast on the weekends, what you experience here. Now, that's a really, really big chunk of change, but you got to understand, we, whether we like it or not, are a weekend-driven organization. All right, the weekend's not the only thing we do. It's not the most important thing we do. But everything else rides in the wave of momentum that is created in our weekend services. This is the one time we get to everybody together. We get to worship together, talk about the truth of God, rally the troops, point to where we're going, point to next steps. This is the rally point. And this is the first impression for new people. So we want to put our best foot forward. Now, full disclosure, and I bet you your last church didn't tell you all this, but full disclosure, right now we are $9 million in debt. $9 million. And so $800,000 of that was budgeted to go towards debt relief this year. Debt relief. Now, sidebar. Most pastors are men of integrity, so they cannot be bought. But today, I've told you this before, I can be bought for the humble price of $9 million. Just saying. Never know who's in the audience. Okay, now, $800,000 debt relief. The other $900,000 goes to everything you see here on the weekends. It goes to providing for the over 117,000 people who showed up at our worship gathering so they can connect with God. It goes to our amazing Bold Collective speakers like Bob Goff, who we've had back twice and everybody loves. It goes to our two new art installs that continually cast vision and remind us why we do what we do. It goes to creating a place where 872 guests, and these are just the guests that have identified themselves. I guarantee you it's probably two or three times this many people who've showed up for the first time. These are just the folks that say, hey, I'm a guest. It goes to making sure that they have a great experience when they first come here and get the hospitality that Jesus wants them to have. It goes to the 8,000 folks that packed out in 7 services for Christmas Eve, man. It's just that, and that's just a fraction. That's just a fraction. It goes to the lights. It goes to the officers that keep us safe. It goes to the staff that provide for your kids or that you see up here leading on stage. And I am very, very appreciative for that. Now, next slide. On top of that, we budgeted $470,000 to go towards spiritual growth this year. Spiritual growth. That's next steps towards Jesus. One of our favorite metrics for that is baptisms. And last year, we saw 222 people receive new life in Christ Jesus. Can you put a price tag on an eternally changed life? I think not. Now we had 34 folks. 34 folks go through our starting environment, and the people who go through our starting point environment are usually non-Christians, skeptics, or new Christians that have really, really hard questions that they need answered. And so we think that's super important. We've had 243 new members connect to our church last year through our membership class. 47 new small groups were started, which brings our total to about 1,411 adults in small groups and 361 students. 361 high school and middle school students think an environment is so compelling on Wednesday nights that they come to it to hang out with Christian mentors and Christian pastors at our church. That's just crazy to me. I probably wouldn't have done it when I was in high school, but you know, our church is awesome. And then for many of you, you've gotten to experience, over 3,000 of you have gotten to experience our classes and studies. So if you're asking me for my personal opinion, you want a return on investment, money well spent. Every single one of these is a step towards Jesus. It's a step towards Jesus. Sometimes it's a small step. Sometimes it's a big step. But as followers of Jesus, that's what we do. Every day we try to take another step. And we are trying to create meaningful steps for you here. All right, next slide. I haven't even began to talk about the next generation. At Northeast Christian Church, you know that we are committed to boldly, boldly, boldly pursuing the next generation, both in our church and in our families, but also outside the four walls in our community. That looks like our partnerships with six partner schools. And as you heard Jason say earlier, we added Norton Commons Elementary just this year. That's around 3,000 kids that we're able to impact in those schools. Oh, and that looks like the 16K you guys pulled together last year in August for teacher appreciation for our teachers in our partner schools. You guys remember that? For $9.99. Okay, you remember? Okay, check this out. Some of you know this, some of you don't. Oldham County, Jefferson County, most public schools do not allow the schools to put any money in the budget for teacher appreciation. The PTA has to come in and do that. So if you don't have a good PTA, the teachers don't get loved on or appreciated. So we're like, that's crazy. So we cut checks for our schools. And they did awesome stuff. One school held a party right out here in our lobby for their teachers. I probably shouldn't tell you this. But there was another school, I'm not going to tell you which one, who used the money that we gave them to take their teachers for a day out at the track. Went to Churchill Town. I asked Randy, I was like, I want you to ask that principal if anybody made any money on their bets, because we want that tithe, right? But anyways, so that's what we've done for our schools. We've had 38,000 kids come through our weekend environments. Over 300 kids went to camp last summer, and camp changes the game for kids. But even more than that, this is cool. We had 11 high schoolers go last year to the Dominican Republic, and if you talk to any of their parents, they'll tell you. Like, they came back changed. I mean, like, they'll tell you. Pretty amazing stuff. We had 10,000 folks on both of our campuses for Kitabaloo. And then last Christmas, we were able to throw two Christmas parties, both for our partner schools and for the Westport Tap School, where about around 400 kids were able to receive hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of gifts. And these are kids who would not have had Christmas otherwise. So there you have it. We will boldly pursue the next generation. And again, you looking for a return on your investment? I believe money well spent. All right, now if that community impact wasn't enough, we budgeted an additional $400,000+ to support our outreach missions, $408,000. Now, the majority of that came from our 2015 Christmas Eve offering, which was around $220,000. You guys want to know how much we collected in our 2016 Eve offering? Come back next week, because I'm going to tell you. All right, sorry. Some of you are so mad. I will tell you next week, okay? And it's exciting. Now, a big chunk of that $408,000 goes to our regional and local partnerships, even some of our missions that we support abroad. Some of that now, though, is starting to funnel out into the way that we support our organic ministries that have been birthed from our church. Some people are just like, I want to love the Ville, like right here in my neighborhood. And so I'm going to start this ministry, or I'm going to start this nonprofit. And we've been glad to be able to support some of them in really cool ways. We have 4 international missionaries on 4 continents. We have 5 church plants in Cochabamba, Bolivia, that we're supporting. And again, I mean, the arms of Jesus from the church at Northeast Christian Church, they reach out all across our city and all across the world. So let me say this, y'all. Let me say this. Northeast Christian Church. Let me say this to the guests here. To those of you who don't know our church, let me say this. You are surrounded right now. You are surrounded by one of the most generous groups of people on the planet Earth. I kid you not. But I do believe we could be even more generous. In 2016, We shattered records, we shattered goals, we shattered all sorts of expectations for the tumultuous transition year that we were supposed to go through. But I believe 2017 could be bigger and could be bolder. And so I would welcome you, I would welcome you. Get right in the middle of what God's doing in Louisville and around the world by investing in your local church. Thank you for your generosity. Steve.
We've been saying every weekend, it's important to us as a church and as a staff that what you hear on Sunday isn't just something you take in and do nothing with, but we want you to take, as Tyler said just a few moments ago, your next step, whatever that is in your spiritual journey. So I want to speak to two groups of people real quick, then we'll dismiss. Number one, if you're visiting with us today, we're thrilled that you're here. I'm going to invite you when the service is over to head out to the lobby. There's a guest kiosk out there, and stop in there and get some good information and meet some people, and I'd love for you to do that today. Secondly, for all of you, we do something at the end of every service, Saturday night, Sunday mornings as well. We have a fireside room out in the lobby where we invite people to come who want to talk to somebody about taking whatever that next step is in their life. And that next step might be something like what it means to be a follower of Christ. It might just be something that you're dealing with in your own life that you want somebody to listen to and pray with you and help you over. And that's what we're there for. It's staffed by our staff as well as some of our elders. And I invite you all, if you take just a moment, go out through the doors, go left, down by the nursery entry, and then you'll see the fireside room on the left. We invite you to come in there. Thanks for being here today. Have a great day today.